Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
About the math, guys, I know you didn't come here to play school. We came here to play sports. It's Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr., Amber Wilson. We'll talk to Roddy Jones, one of our great ACC network analysts, who's going to be on the call for some Thursday night football on ESPN, Boise State at UCF at the Bounce House, to help preview the ACC as we keep going towards week one in college football. But Amber, it has been, you and I have enjoyed our time together this summer. At least I have. I won't speak for you on that. I hope you've enjoyed hanging out here with us on the show. And getting to talk about Cam Newton and the Patriots basically every day.
Mac Jones is better than Brady.
Especially if Cliff is going to keep railroading you like that.
Right. Well, there you go. That's Cliff's fault. I don't know if Mel's enjoying his time, since I think we are taking Mel Kiper out of context a bit. That's what we do here, though.
That is what we do here. Cliff, play it one more time.
Mac Jones is better than Brady.
That is from Mel Kiper Jr. breaking down Mac Jones, the now starting quarterback for the Patriots. Combine measurables compared to Tom Brady. Combine measurables are better than Tom Brady. I don't want Mel Kiper's people coming for me, Cliff. If that's a life that you want to live, so be it.
I think you just said Mac Jones is just better than Brady overall.
Oh my God in heaven, this is why I drink.
But Mac Jones is better than Brady.
In the meantime, Amber, we've spent so much time talking about the Patriots. We thought as we get closer to the season, looking at some of the NFL divisions might be the smart way to go about it. And now that we've gotten to the point where it's settled, where we look at this AFC East now as a whole, Buffalo still feels like they're on top, as angry as Christine Lisi, our ESPN SportsCenter update anchor and noted Buffalo Bills fan, was yesterday at all this talk about the Patriots. Amber, do you think it's actually New England that's sitting there nipping at the Bills' heels at this point?
No, I don't. And Christine should be angry. This is the Bills' time, and the Bills have earned this. They're the defending divisional champs, and they should be in a position to win the division again. I mean, they went 13-3 last season. This Patriots team was 7-9 last year, and I understand that it's going to look different, and I understand that you have the opt-outs coming back in, and I understand that Bill and the crew actually spent money this offseason, and we're not used to the Patriots doing that. And they've actually worked on improving things like the O-line, and now we're going to have Mac Jones there. The reality is, though, that Mac Jones, even though you don't always hear it on our air, and maybe not from Mel Kiper right there in that clip that Cliff, again, kind of unfairly cut.
Mac Jones is better than Brady.
He is a rookie. He's not actually better than Tom Brady now. He's not actually in the hall yet. I know you'd think sometimes that he is with the coverage over the last 48 hours since he was named the starter there in New England. And none of us actually know how good Mac Jones is going to be in regular season games that actually count. We haven't seen him do it much with the ones, and we certainly haven't seen him do it against the ones. And so I think it's unfair of people to say that it's the Patriots' division, and yet I've heard it time and again. It is unfair to Christine's Bills because it is absolutely the Bills' division, unless the Miami Dolphins have something to say about it.
Well, I wanted to ask you about the Dolphins, Amber, because you and I have been on the other side of the Miami Dolphins O-line Twitter debate, and I know you've taken some umbrage with my words, so I want to read you someone else's words. Cameron Wolf, who has done a great job covering the Dolphins for us, now over at the NFL Network reporting there, tweeted this out the other day, August 30th, so mere days ago as we got started with the NFL's cuts. The Dolphins' O-line is still the biggest question mark here. I can't lie, I'm worried about it. Definitely some uneasiness about multiple starting spots in depth, but that's the case throughout much of the league. Young group will have to grow in action, or it could hold the offense back. Are you willing to admit I'm right?
I am not. In fact, a young group, fine. There was multiple rookies on that line last season. They ain't rookies anymore. So it's not as young as it was last season, even if it's still young. And the thing that you all implied, you on the opposite side of the hashtag Dolphins O-line Twitter, the thing that you were all implying on the network, whether it was you or even Mina Kimes and Dan Orlovsky, and I heard a lot of conversation about the Dolphins O-line's woes, and they weren't great. Like, the Dolphins O-line is not like an excellent O-line. Fine, it's a young O-line that's being pieced together and built, but it also wasn't nearly as terrible as you would have had us believe before the season started. I mean, people were acting like it would be a disservice to Tua to roll him out there under center. People were saying that Tua was legitimately going to get murdered. People were concerned about the safety of Tua. They were acting like the O-line was that bad. And by the time Tua was starting in the second half of the season, the O-line, frankly, wasn't really the issue. Like, Tua didn't spend much time on his back, and he didn't have any sort of season-ending injury. It's interesting, because I didn't hear anybody say before last season that it was, you know, murder to put Joe Burrow out there with that O-line in Cincinnati, and then we see what happened to him. Or I'm not hearing the same conversation around Trevor Lawrence. Everybody was acting like Urban Meyer was ridiculous for not naming Trevor Lawrence the starting quarterback, and yet there's obvious O-line concerns there as well. This is what happens with these young quarterbacks on teams that are rebuilding. And certainly the Miami Dolphins were doing that for a period of time under Brian Flores. The thing is, they were 10-6 last season. They barely missed the playoffs. They won 10 games. And there's no reason to believe that they won't build on that. Tua so far has looked good in the preseason. And they have brought in weapons for him. Notably, of course, Jalen Waddle and Will Fuller. And then otherwise, this is a young team that has a year more experience under its belt and a really good defense. I just don't understand why this Dolphins team would regress, frankly. So can they get 11, 12, 13 wins this season? It's not insane to say, despite your O-line concerns, Golic.
Well, I think the O-line concerns are real. I think the majority of our concerns last year were about the fact that Tua was the only one of those quarterbacks with a recently fractured hip going out behind that offensive line. Like, Joe Burrow had not yet been hurt. I had conversations with Mina Kimes on her podcast about how you overcome basically an offensive line full of turnstiles in Cincinnati. So I think so much of that had to do with Tua's recent injury history. And what I think it has to do with now, Amber, and the reason Cameron Wolf, myself, and others would be concerned is, all right, you've moved a bunch of guys around. Liam Eikenberg's a second-round draft pick that's going to factor in some ways in this. As you've tried to find the right five, you're now going to be relied upon a bit more. When Tua got under center last year, they kept it low and now it wasn't like a brisket where it was low and show, but it was low and short for everything that Tua had going on. This offense is going to rightly put more in his lap this year. That's where the concern becomes, is does the offensive line, as they figure out and continue to grow, they're not a laughing stock. They're not a group of turnstiles. There
Thank
is
you.
Promising talent.
I feel like this
in there.
Is a big win. Can you just say that again? Like, that was a big win for Dolphins O-line Twitter.
To be clear, though, our response was just to the notion that Dolphins, like, this is what we all do. We call and respond, is that the Dolphins O-line defenders started trying to make them sound like the Steel Curtain or something like that came over on offense. And so we all misunderstood each other.
We may have overcorrected a tad. I didn't need to make them sound like the Steel Curtain.
I think we all did this. And so where we land now, Amber, is interesting because the Jets in this division are going to be a non-factor competitively. It's all going to be great and on a different curve there. It's going to be, quite frankly, we thought last year was supposed to be for the Dolphins, which was another year on the trajectory up. They got ahead of schedule, which skewed a lot of the ways that we talked about Tua and judged him last year. The Jets aren't going to have that issue. Zach Wilson's going to have time to cook this thing slow because that defense, injured now, they've had such bad luck through camp, going to struggle. I think now as we look at Buffalo, New England, and Miami, what becomes interesting is just how quickly Mac Jones takes a hold of this. Because, again, I think New England's defense is going to make this interesting. We know what Miami's secondary is now that they got the Xavien Howard thing figured out. That's going to be another bona fide group again this year. But, man, Buffalo still feels like the only team at this point that's built to ascend to the top level. It's kind of like in college when we look at Ohio State and the Big Ten. They're the only team in that conference built to go and play the other premier schools in other conferences, not just built to get out of their conference. And Buffalo is the team that is built to go and try and slay the giant in Kansas City. That I can't say for the rest of these teams.
Well, that's why this is Christine's time, right? Because I think we all agree that it's Buffalo at the top and that it's New York at the bottom. And then we could have a debate where Miami and New England might fall into the picture. But I don't think either of us are confident that either of those teams could eclipse the Buffalo Bills. So I think that the division, at least going into the season, from what we've seen, absent injuries, the division seems pretty clear in terms of top and bottom anyways.
Pretty clear there. So the AFC East seems like a clear picture. We know who the top dog is. We know who the contenders are. And we know what we're looking for in New York with the Jets. Coming up, though, in the NBA, we know who's been on the outs in Philadelphia for a while now. Did another star player just put himself in harm's way? That's next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Today in Golic Jr., the podcast.
Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Amber Wilson. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Roddy Jones going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline, our ACC analyst, in about 10 minutes here as we preview the Atlantic Coast Conference, getting ready for week one in college football. But Amber, before we do that, I feel like we've spent a lot of time this week, in addition to talking about Patriots quarterback things, also talking about players arguing with fans. And I think in general, when we look at the Javier Baez situation that we just saw with the Mets, them giving the thumbs down to fans who had booed them while the team had been bad, and now work our way over to Philadelphia, where Joel Embiid, the star player for the Philadelphia 76ers, an MVP candidate this last season, took to Twitter today to dispute reports that he and Ben Simmons had a rift behind the scenes that was driving a lot of this conversation about Ben Simmons leaving Philadelphia. And Embiid even went so far as to point to the crowd in Philadelphia and say, I remember a couple of years back when I was getting booed, it motivated me to go out there and be better to get to where I was now here. Amber, why do you think right now we're seeing more of this, more of players feeling comfortable clapping back at the crowds that cheer for them?
Well, I don't know if the situations are related at all. I think with the 76ers situation, you have Ben Simmons this week making it clear that he has no intention of showing up to Philadelphia 76ers training camp. And it felt a lot like, I'm going to dump you before you can dump me, even though I know you're about to dump me, but I want to be able to say that I dumped you. That's what it felt like from Ben Simmons and his camp, because we know the 76ers had been shopping Simmons, and we know that they had made the commitment to Joel Embiid. And what has become, it seems like, obvious in this situation, because if there was so much kumbaya between those two, then why are we deciding who to build the franchise around, and why are we trying to get rid of the other superstar, right? Like, if it's working so well, why are we trying to get rid of one of them? And there was actual conversation here that has spanned years with these rumors and rumors about them maybe not being the best of friends, let's put it mildly there, and maybe there being some issues in that locker room. And it's not just rumors. I mean, we've heard other statements throughout the years that have made it pretty clear that there are issues in that locker room, whether it's between those two or whether it was the team generally. But all signs point towards the fact that your two superstars were certainly having some sort of issue there. And now we're at a place where they have decided to make the full commitment to Joel Embiid, right? Like, they hand him that bag, they hand him that Supermax. He takes it because, you know, doesn't have a problem with the Philly fan when he's making $196 million in just extension money alone. All of a sudden, no problem with the Philly fan. So he takes that bag and he's in Philadelphia for the long term, where he will be under contract there until something like 2027. And then there are trying to trade away Ben Simmons. That seems pretty well reported at this point, even if they haven't yet gotten what they want for him. And so with Ben Simmons on his way out, now Joel Embiid is doing the thing that you do, where after these years and after all the rumors and after the situation that has seemed obvious to us, then he comes out and he says, no, that's just in y'all's mind. Y'all are making it up. You're doing it for the follows. He went full fake news on Twitter, I saw, where now he's, of course, accusing the media of the fake news and that we just do things for follows and blah, 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 yada, yada.
Well, he also hit him with the Philly fans, y'all also gotta be better. And that, to me, Amber, I wonder if it works better coming from Joel Embiid than it did coming from Javier Baez and those Mets players. Because Joel at least gets to do this from a position of power, right? He's held up his end of the bargain there. We can say what we want about the team, but does the criticism hold any more weight when it comes from a guy who has won the crowd, who is beloved by the fan base? Cliff, I would look at you, our producer Cliff, our resident Philadelphia fan here. Does that feel easier to digest than what we saw between Javi Baez and Mets fan when Embiid says it?
No, I think both situations are bad because, one, Javi Baez is new to the Mets. Like, he's batting .220. The team's been awful. They're like 8 games back now when they had a lead in the division. He has nothing to stand on, so I don't know what his deal is. But Embiid, he has nothing to stand on either because he said himself, the crowd pushed me, the fans pushed me to be better. So what's the issue here? We helped you get better. I'm not, like, and we're not. No. I'm not trying to take credit for it. Like,
I mean, this is the second time, in fairness, in the show where you kind of have taken credit for success.
I'm not trying to take credit for it, but he said it himself. The fans pushed me to get better. So what's the issue here?
He did say that. In fairness to Cliff, though, absent Cliff taking credit for Joel Embiid and his progress in his career, he did say that the fans motivated me in one breath, and then in the next breath says that the fans need to do better.
I don't, what's the better, though? What is he searching for us to be better about?
Well, see, I think this is one of these things that's never going to change about sports either.
But are we supposed to keep babying a player who doesn't seem to want to get better? Like, is that what he wants?
That, well, and I would say in this particular instance, we're probably having a bit of, like, cognitive dissonance here. Like, Joel is, in my mind, coming out to say this because he's trying to absolve himself of blame in this situation. He doesn't want to be brought up in this. And, what, like Amber brought up, whether or not there is truth to that, Joel is at least trying to publicly come out and probably do a bit of good PR for himself, saying, hey, this isn't about me. You guys can have this conversation. I just don't want to be a part of it because I am on the good side of things here in Philadelphia. The misstep is pointing back to the fan base and say, be better. Because none of this is ever going to work in sports. Like, the relationship between players and fans is always going to be a little antagonistic because we know how all players and people inside sports are wired, right? To remember and internalize every possible perceived slight and turn it into usable fuel for action. Am I right?
You're definitely correct. And fans also got to stop doing the thing of, like, we pay your salary because we show up. Please stop doing that. Those dudes earn their salary because they worked hard all their lives to reach the level that they're at. Stop saying, oh, well, I show up to games. I pay for parking. I pay for this beer. I pay for this hot dog. My five kids came with me, so we pay your salary, so we have the right to talk to you like you're not a human being, which is totally not true and totally wrong to think that way.
And also different from this situation.
But talking not like a human being and booing, I think maybe you could argue are two different things, right? Because booing does tend to be part of sports and sort of the routine protocol in sports. I just think that with Joel Embiid, the situation that is bothering me here with these comments is the fact that he's putting it back on the fans and putting it back on the media like they're making things up when it comes to the rift with Ben Simmons. And it just feels like it's been so well documented over the years. And given it, yes, it's all rumors and it's all unsubstantiated, but where there's so much smoke, there appears to be fire. And you have had players like the Al Horfords of the world come out and directly say, like, we were not gelling. We had issues in that locker room. And that has been from the horse's mouth in terms of players who have spent time there on the 76ers. And now there's a denial from Joel Embiid acting like everything's been wonderful there and that it's all on us. And that's really, like, we're all making it up. And the fans are booing and it's all unfair and everybody's being too harsh. And it feels like it's easy to say now that Ben Simmons seems like he's on his way out of Philadelphia.
It also does seem like something that Joel Embiid is saying on behalf of someone who he's not sure can handle it in the same way that he does. And I think there's something to be said for protecting a guy like that. I'll be interested, and I think we'll learn a lot if this is the last time we hear from Joel Embiid throughout this saga, what these comments were really about. But coming up next, let's take a look in college football at the ACC. Is it really just Clemson standing around by themselves, or are we on the lookout for someone else coming up the ranks? Next on ESPN Radio.
Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
I did not anticipate this today. Support for Bryson DeChambeau within the PGA. We'll get to who decided to speak up for the big golfer in about 10 minutes here as we keep that same energy. But it's Jhené and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr., Amber Wilson hanging out here, and we are getting very, very close. Like, tonight close, really, for the start of week one, truly in earnest, in college football. And so we're working through the conferences, giving you the best previews that we can heading into the 2021 season. And for more help on that, as we have gone down the road and hit the Big Ten already, we're working our way on here. It is Wednesday, Gary, which means it's time for the ACC. And to help us out with that one, Roddy Jones, ACC Network analyst, joining us now here on the Goodyear Hotline. Roddy, what's going on, man?
Mike, I am fantastic. It's good to catch up. Amber, I hope you're well as well. Appreciate you guys having me on.
And Roddy, we're excited to hit on a lot of things with you here. The ACC starts with Clemson, so we'll start there. And this is now DJ Uiagalelei's team. We saw him in a couple of spots last year. As we walk into 21 with him the full-time guy now, what's the biggest difference in the way this group will operate now?
So that's a good question, Mike, because he's not the only thing that's changing on that offense. But focusing specifically on the quarterback position, I think the biggest difference that you're going to see is actually in the quarterback run game. Trevor Lawrence was such a good zone read quarterback. I mean, think of all the times that he pulls the ball down near the goal line, that he trots in the end zone. And honestly, they used him a decent amount, not super often, but in very effectively in quarterback draw situations. That big run against Ohio State in the semifinal a couple of years ago being the best example. But DJ Uiagalelei is not that type of runner. He's going to be more the Taj Boyd, sort of Kelly Bryant type run scheme, where it's more quarterback power, quarterback counter, stuff between the tackles. Not to say that he can't run that zone read stuff, but I do think it's an element that they have not run a ton of the past couple of years with Trevor Lawrence. Outside of that in the pass game, I think that's mainly going to be determined by the success and the ability of the receivers. I mean, Justin Ross, probably the best receiver in the ACC, gets cleared. He's coming back. He's going to be in the slot. So I would expect that slot position to be really to be the focal point. But the biggest difference is going to be in that quarterback run game.
So we're talking a lot about their offense, but is that the best defense in the country?
Oh, that's a big question. For my money, yeah. Look, they've got the best defensive line in the country. Brian Brzee, Miles Murphy, Tyler Davis. And a guy that we're not really talking about is sort of fourth now in that group is Xavier Thomas. Xavier Thomas was fantastic a couple of years ago. Struggled in the offseason with COVID, had a tough time getting back, gained some weight. He's back down to a weight that he feels comfortable at, and I think he's poised for a great season. At the linebacker level, they've got two guys that have played a ton of football. I mean, James Skalski, I'm not kidding, guys. James Skalski is on his third presidential administration at Clemson, and really his third presidential administration starting at Clemson. So he has been around forever for them. Baylen Specter next to him is a player that's really experienced. Then in the secondary, they've got three corners that are draft picks, two of them probably first two-day draft picks, and then three safeties that have played a ton. So for my money, yeah, it's the best defense in the country. I know people in Tuscaloosa are going to be upset about what I'm saying because Alabama's defense is really good, but Clemson's right up there.
Chinay Ngola Jr. talking to Roddy Jones, our ACC Network analyst on the Goodyear Hotline. Roddy, as far as people who have maybe only been here for a little while, North Carolina's looking around at a bunch of new faces. The hockey line change, the skill talent that resides in the NFL now around Sam Howell. What does this offense look like? Can they pick up right where last year Pitt left off?
I don't think so, Mike, and that's no slight to what I think they're going to be. I think they're going to be really good on offense. But you look at the guys that are replacing who they lost, especially in the backfield, Michael Carter, Javonte Williams, two backs that were incredible, 2,000-yard rushers for them, and guys that caught the ball out of the backfield. Ty Chandler, the transfer from Tennessee, is coming in, and I think he'll be really good, but he can be really good. You know, a average 6 yards per carry, catch the ball out of the backfield, and still not replace the production that Michael Carter and Javonte Williams had. Both of those guys over 7 yards per carry last year were just really dynamic. And then Deami Brown and Daz Newsome were draft picks as well at receiver. I'm not quite as worried about the receivers. I think they probably, the big question is, can they be as consistent as they were a year ago? And that's a question that you get with youth. So I'm not super worried about the receiving core. I think it may take a game or two for them to get going. But that running back position, they got so much production and so much off-schedule production. You know, a guy misses a block in the backfield and those two guys make a play. Sam Howell has to scramble, hits one of those guys, and they go for 40 yards and a touchdown. But I think that's going to be the toughest thing to replace. So I think they'll be really good. Not sure they're going to duplicate last year's success.
Roddy, Miami has some questions on offense. Most people think that the quarterback is not one of them. But where do you think the ceiling is for Derek King? How successful can he be in that offense?
I think Derek King can have a lot of success in that offense. I think he could be a top, you know, probably 4 or 5 offense in the ACC, which is saying something. Looking up and down this league, she's going to be a league with some really talented offenses outside of just Clemson in North Carolina. So I think Derek King, when you look at that Miami offense, he's set up for success. Now, all of this is based on the health of his ACL. He tore his ACL like 8 months ago, tore it in the bowl game. So if his ACL is fully healed, if he's ready to go, and really the biggest thing is if he trusts it, then I think he has a chance from the very beginning, maybe second game. Alabama's tough. But maybe that second game starting there has a chance to really excel and put up ACC Player of the Year type numbers. That offensive line has matured and grown together. They've got talent. Now they're experienced talent. These guys have been bruised and bloodied for 2+ years. So I think they'll be really good. They've shored up the receiver position in terms of the drops that they had last year, which has plagued them the last couple seasons with Charleston Rambo coming in. And I think that running back room is talented. So I really like this Miami offense.
Roddy, before we let you get going here, we know these are the big names in the ACC, the big brands. When you look at the rest, is there a dark horse team? Is there someone that's not getting enough shine at this point that you think is due to step up this year?
I'll give you one on each side of the conference. On the Atlantic side, I think it's Wake Forest. You know, people often just discount Wake Forest. But two things with Wake. One, they're a developmental program, and there's lots of places that say that. Wake is truly the definition of that. Every single offensive lineman that comes into that program gets redshirted, almost without exception. Over the last 5 years, you can count the number of exceptions on one hand. So they grow their guys up consistently, and guys that stay in that program get better. You can't say that everywhere. Like, every guy who stays at Wake Forest gets better. They're going to have one of the best offenses in the conference. That was an offense that was dynamic last year, and I think it has a chance to be dynamic this year. They've got a running back who had the highest yards per game average in the conference amongst returners coming back. And Jaquari Roberson, the receiver, led the ACC amongst returning guys. Now had the most yards per game receiving in and overall yards. So I like Wake Forest a lot. Then on the coastal side, I think it's Pitt. You know, people aren't really talking a lot about Pitt, but Kenny Pickett is back for another season. Feels like he's been there forever. But this is a guy who had an invite to the Senior Bowl, would have been an NFL draft pick a year ago, and it's sort of some people's sleeper pick for a guy that can have a Kyle Trask-like ascent into the first couple of days of the NFL draft. So I really like what he's going to do. They've got a lot of talent at receiver around him. That offensive line has a bunch of guys returning, as most do across the country. And I think running back is going to be the big difference for this Pitt team. Israel Abanikanda is going to be a guy that is going to be a household name before it's all said and done this year.
It's going to be exciting. If you want more great analysis like that, you can get two shots of Roddy Jones in your weekend. Thursday night alongside Matt Barry and Harry Lyles on the field for Boise State at UCF. And then this weekend, Roddy, West Durham, and Larisha Harris got UMass and Pitt squaring off. So, Roddy, have a great couple of calls. Looking forward to getting college football started this weekend, buddy.
Appreciate both of y'all. Have a great day and enjoy week one of college football.
God, we will ever. This celebratory moment of college football returning is brought to you by Allstate. Save money like a champion with Allstate. Championship savings for the win. Coming up next, though, finding friends in unlikely places. Bryson DeChambeau found one on the PGA Tour. We'll tell you who stuck up for the big golfer next on ESPN Radio.
Coming up tomorrow on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. Alabama head football coach Nick Saban as the top-ranked Crimson Tide get ready for 14th-ranked Miami this Saturday. Plus, we'll ask him about three of his former Alabama quarterbacks starting in week one of the NFL season. Nick Saban, tomorrow morning with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin at 8:10 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News. Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Amber Wilson, thank you to the guests that joined us today. ESPN NFL front office insider Mike Tannenbaum helping us digest what it's like being in these GM rooms trying to make decisions, especially with COVID in mind, as the NFL cuts have been going on. Jack Swarbrick, Notre Dame athletic director, joined us earlier to talk about Notre Dame's upcoming season, college football playoff expansion, realignment, really everything. One of the most influential voices in the sport. And then Roddy Jones, our ESPN ACC network analyst, former Georgia Tech great, going to be on the call for UCF and Boise State on your TVs tomorrow night with Matt Barry and Harry Lyles. If you missed any of that, check it out. Download, subscribe, rate, and review Janae and Golic Jr. podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And Amber, I'm cautiously optimistic that this might be, maybe, our last day coming in here having to lead the show with something related to the Patriots quarterback battle. I think after Bill Belichick's comments today about Cam Newton, about why this happened, about if vaccines were involved, I feel like we might have come to the end of the road on this one.
Oh, no, no, no. I feel like you're falling for the rope-a-dope. Don't do it. Don't do it, Mike. I care about you. You can never, ever assume that the Cam Newton, Mac Jones story has come to a conclusion. In fact, I'm not sure it will come to a conclusion until like the end of one day Mac Jones's career, because I assume his career will probably end up being longer than Cam's. We'll see. Who knows? He's a lot younger. That's the only reason I'm doing it that way. whoever is last in the league. Finally, once they have played their last game, maybe we will stop talking about these two. And it is funny because I do actually think they're always going to be linked.
Wow. Who'd ever thought Cam Newton and Mac Jones forever linked by the quarterback battle
linked.
That dominated our preseason here. Let's finish this thing off the right way. Get away from the Patriots and keep that same energy. We want to be a jolt of energy.
Yeah, the energy level was really high there.
And now we want to keep that same energy going.
Keeping that same energy.
Keep that same energy.
You could just sense that there was a tremendous amount of energy.
With Janae and Golic Jr.
I mean, Mac Jones and Tom Brady are going to be forever linked.
God, Mac Jones.
That one makes even less sense.
Mac Jones is the universal solvent. He's linked with everyone, every quarterback in this class, the 49ers and Trey Lance. It's all happening. Keep That Same Energy is brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life. And keeping that same energy, Amber, we know that Louisiana has been dealing with a lot in the storms recently. Hurricane Ida and what has come along with that is some teams being displaced. We know that is not the primary focus down there, and certainly our thoughts are with the folks in Louisiana recovering from that. New Orleans is still going to host the Green Bay Packers, but on September 12th, it's going to be in Jacksonville at TIAA Bank Field while the city of New Orleans recovers from that hurricane here. So it's good to see always other places stepping up and helping as our friends in Louisiana deal with yet another hardship.
Yeah, all the Florida teams and venues certainly know a thing or two about having to change locations for games because of the devastation of hurricanes. So it's good to see Jacksonville stepping up and offering their services here and offering their venue. And it'll be good for the Saints and the Packers to play this game in neutral territory and the Saints to be able to still host the Packers. And it certainly has worked for Florida and Georgia. So there you go. Neutral territory.
Keeping that same energy here on ESPN Radio. Rory McIlroy was not the name I had stepping up to defend Bryson DeChambeau after Tuesday's conversation about the PGA now threatening to throw out fans who call him Brooksy from the crowd. Rory stepped up and said, quote, "It's pretty tough to be Bryson right now. I certainly feel sympathy for him because I don't think you should be ostracized or criticized for being different. I think we have all known from the start Bryson is different and he's going to not conform to the way people want him to be. There's certainly things he's done in the past that have brought some of this stuff on himself. I'm not saying he's completely blameless." I guess everyone needs a friend, right, Amber?
I guess so. You know how much I hate this story, just because can we stop acting like this silly rivalry isn't fun and it isn't good for golf? And let's stop acting like calling Bryson Brooksy is the end of the world. And now with Rory, it's nice that he's stepping up and he's defending Bryson. But it just all feels like much ado about nothing. Can we just embrace it all? I love this rivalry. I wish that they would stop trying to temper it.
Well, we're not going to temper expectations for this because keeping that same energy, Eli Manning now getting his own show on ESPN Plus with Eli's Places. The two-time Super Bowl champ is going to host a college football-centric version of Peyton's Places. Amber, I threw my hat in the ring for Mike's Places, where I go get drunk with former college players at the dive bars around their campus, and I think it works great.
I'd watch that show.
I would be all over that show. But until the executives here get that, keeping that same energy, a very happy fifth birthday to Harry Golic, the Golic family's second pug, a young black pug who started off as a little nugget and now is a full-blown ham, Amber.
Happy birthday, Harry Golic.
I saw he got a cookie cake.
Is there a middle name there?
No, he was named after Harambe, the fallen gorilla, so bears a striking resemblance to very flappy face.
How did I not see that?
And listen, we are nothing if not predictable in the Golic household here. Wishing happy birthday to dogs and wishing you well with Spain and Fitz. They're up next on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Janae and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.